Hello and welcome to Maximal Fires Heresy Heroes. Today I'm joined by Rob Medwell of Medders Miniatures. Rob Medwell is an Instagrammer and YouTuber better known for his work under his alias Medders Miniatures. I was first made aware of Rob back when I started dabbling in Instagram in 2021 post-COVID and have eagerly followed his career ever since. Rob has been commission painting for a number of years and specialises in models from the Horus Heresy games. He does online tutorials on Instagram and YouTube, as well as in-person tuition on a one-on-one and group basis. He joins us today on Maximal Fires Heresy Heroes to talk all things heresy, as well as take a peek behind the veil of the commission painter. Just want to say hello, Rob. Are you doing well tonight?
Yes, I am very well. Thank you ever so much for having me today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you very much for being my guinea pig with this.
No worries. No problem at all.
So you are more commonly sort of known by your internet persona on the Instagrams and the YouTubes as yes. Medders, I guess, of Medders Miniatures.
My alter ego. That's right. My painting alter ego. That's right. Yeah.
So, but also, some people may know Rob from Heresy Hammer, the podcast, as well. Yep. So, Rob, we're here to talk about Medders Miniatures in particular today. So, Medders Miniatures, if you haven't checked them out on Instagram. Really, really great page, and also the YouTube as well. I'll be dropping links to this in the descriptions down below if you want to check out his stuff. Commission painter, heresy aficionado, sort of. I'll be. This is me gushing a little bit, but when I first started painting Titans, I wanted to find out, like, how the hell do I paint Czechs?
Yes, and I remember this. I stumbled
across your Instagram Dark Angels. I think
that's
it was
right,
the tutorial on
yeah
on
that's
Instagram.
Right yeah
and yeah, that is yeah, my go-to
yeah. using a kind of a piece of kind of clear plastic, right, and then working out using that as a template for check transfers. Yeah, that's the best way to do it, I think. Definitely on like Rhinos and stuff like that as well. But yeah, that's a good way to do it.
I've got little pieces of plastic like blue tacked to my desk over here.
So have I. I've got them as well. They're right here, always ready to go. Yeah, I've got Contemptor shoulder pad ones. I've got Spartan ones. I've got them all. I've got Leviathan chest plate ones right here.
What I will say, however, is trying to curl a piece of blister plastic around like the shin pads of a Reaver.
Yeah, nearly impossible, right? Yeah,
less easy to do. But yeah, no, that has always been my kind of go-to ever since I saw that, and it is one of the saved posts that I have on my thing, because whenever somebody's asking on our Discord channel, like, how do you do checks? Because I did checks on my Crucius, I did checks on my Tempestus. And they do the rounds quite often on the Discord server. It's like, how do you do that? I was like, haha, well, follow this link and go check this guy out.
Yeah, well, I'd never ever paint them either. I mean, that's a mugs game, I think, painting checks. Yeah, definitely doing it with transfers.
I know a few people who've done it and lost their sanity doing it.
Fools, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, YouTube channel, Instagram, very healthy Instagram, I must say. Very jealous.
Yep.
But you do commission painting, and you also do like one-on-one tutorials and basically anything and everything to do with painting. Is it it's specifically heresy is the majority of what you do? I've seen a few Terminators and stuff.
Yeah, so the majority of the things that I do are related to Horus Heresy, but some clients do allow me to dabble in other game systems. So I've done Star Wars Legion before. I've done Infinity. I've done 40K. I've done some Warcry Warbands. So I've done the whole gamut of kind of gaming systems. I've even done, I don't know if you've heard of this one, a massive Darkest Dungeon tutorial, which was like a Kickstarter a few years back.
Played the PC game, year. Not the board game.
Yeah, but they turned it into a board game, and it had like so many kind of like playing pieces of really funky models. So that was a lot of fun. So yeah, I do anything and everything, but I think that I kind of am best known for the Horus Heresy stuff. That tends to be sort of 60-70% of my kind of workload at any one time.
And certainly if you check out your Instagram, it's probably more than 60% of your posts. Oh,
100%. 100%. Yeah, 100%.
So, I mean, Heresy is our jam as well. We don't dabble so much in the 28mm, of course. Like, we are
the big boys game. Yeah.
Oh, come on. Well, you may be the big boys game. I think we're the old man's game. Like,
yeah, that's it. Yeah.
We're the veterans game. The people who remember 1988. But yes. Well, I'm going to ask you a few questions tonight. And as you are sort of heresy adjacent, let's just say, there is you may notice a little bit of a theme to some of these questions. But I thought that the best way to start this off before we kind of go into the stuff that I've already like agreed with you we're going to talk about is throw some random curveballs out there.
Excellent.
With
you sent me an agenda earlier today, didn't you? And then you surprised me by saying there was going to be these sudden death style questions.
Look, no judgment, okay? There is no right answer. Well, there's probably a few right answers, depends who you ask. But I think I know how you're going to answer some of these already. But let's go, shall we? So, loyalist or traitor?
Loyalist.
28mm or epic scale?
28, easy.
What's the best acrylic black paint?
AK matte black or Army Painter Fanatic black. One is matte and one is satin.
Okay, so which one is it? I've not used either of those before, so which is I like a matte black, you see.
Yeah, AK's matte, and the new Fanatic range are more satin, they have a satin finish, more like GW, I'd say, in their finish.
Nice. Okay, you can only kill one. Ooh. Erebus, Lorgar, or Horus?
Lorgar.
Alpha Legion, good guys or bad guys?
Good guys.
And only one can return. Battlefleet Gothic, Aliens and Heresy Era Games, or the old GW website?
That's a no-brainer. It's the old GW website, obviously.
More so than Battlefleet Gothic. Easy.
Yeah, but I never played. I'm not interested in that. That spaceships in space have no interest for me whatsoever. Ooh,
I think the comment section will probably explode at that comment more than anything.
No interest in that.
Okay. All right. Brilliant. Great stuff. Well, those are the icebreakers done. Let's go into the reason that we've got
serious
you on
stuff.
Here. The serious stuff. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how did you get into Games Workshop and miniature painting in particular?
Oh, gosh. So, I mean, I think that like most people who got into the hobby, I got into it early on, which was, I remember going around a friend's house, Stephen's house, when I was like 10 years old, and his brother, dad, he was into it and got into it from there, really, and, you know, saved up my pennies for second edition 40K, not knowing what on earth I was doing, just having lots of space marines and orcs and gretchens to paint up and never doing anything with them, really, you know, just painting like one or two and then not knowing how to play at all because it was second edition was just way too complicated for a child who was 11. And then kind of dipped in and out of it as a teenager, in just in terms of modeling, really. I never really played until I left
university and had some disposable income to be actually be able to afford an army. But I have been into the creative side of the hobby since I was 10. And that I think has been my primary motivator. But as I say, I only got into the game as a result of the Horus Heresy. 40K, no. Age of Sigmar, no. Fantasy Battles, no, none of that. Like, I've only really played Horus Heresy and a few games of AT. That's been my main gaming. And that's probably why I do most of the painting for the Horus Heresy.
So you went balls deep straight into the resin then?
Yeah, yeah. And I remember, I mean, it was around, I think I was 18, so it must have been 2006 when the first Horus Heresy, Horus Rising dropped. And that kind of got me into the books of the Horus Heresy. And then from there, I think that Forge World just started their journey a few years later into the kind of like book one, with Betrayal. And then by that point, I was quite into it. And you know, it was nowhere near as big as it is now. But resin had a resin army, saved up my pennies month on month, and was able to, that was it. It was super expensive back then, but the plastics have made it so much more accessible than it was.
Yeah, and it's nice to see them kind of finally sort of start to diversify in the plastic range now with the new Space Marine armor variants and obviously the new Solar Auxilia as well, which
Exciting. I mean, it's interesting because we've actually had very few new models for the Horus Heresy. I mean, the Kratos has really been the only new model that I can think of in terms of like a vehicle or whatever, or an infantry plastic kit. You know, like we had assault squads and we've got assault squads again, but the Kratos is like completely new. The same with the Solar Orcs line, you know, most of it's the same, but we've got this new little walker as well, right? So, you know, way more accessible. But just fingers crossed we get to see like more and more new units. I'll never be satisfied. It's always good to have.
Yeah, I own four Kratos. I've got four of those.
They're just four teeny tiny ones.
They're just a lot smaller than yours. Yeah. And that was the amount which I was able to grab before they all went out of stock. So you mentioned in the quickfire round loyalist. What is your legion? Who are your boys?
What isn't my legion? Like, I have an Ultramarines army. I have an Imperial Fists army. I have a Custodes army. I have a Salamanders army. I've also got an Alpha Legion army. However, whatever loyalties you want to decide what they are. But I do have a Traitors army, which is Sons of Horus army. But predominantly, I'm loyalist. Apart from those days where I'm feeling rather traitorous. I just love the loyalist cause. I just love the idea that they're just always on the back foot within the Horus Heresy. They're just, you know, I just love that idea that, you know, they don't get many victories and they don't get them often, but when they do, they're just so sweet.
Yeah, absolutely. Is there any one, though, in particular that you kind of, as always, for me, I think it dates back to when I was playing second edition 40K. Always a Blood Angel. So for me, always been about the Blood Angels and Sanguineers.
I could go through every legion and tell you something I love about every single legion. Like, I honestly, I've got equal love for every single one, even if it's down to paint scheme and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, there's lore that I love, you know, with Blood Angels, right? I like, same, Sanguineous. What an awesome character. That we've seen the Black Library novels, awesome model, you know, and we in those early days of like Golden Demon when I was a little kid, you know, people were doing really awesome like Sanguineous conversions, right, you know, and putting them into the monster category, and you know, that just, you know, has just inspired me. So, but every legion, I've got something I like about every single one.
So while we're talking about Primarchs, did Magnus do anything wrong?
No, Magnus did not do anything wrong.
So you absolutely see him not. Very much as the tragic hero in this.
Absolutely, he's the tragic hero, and Russ is the absolute bully. Like, how anybody can view it any other way? He tried to save the Imperium, but you know, I guess right that you could say he kind of was dabbling in the warp. He made pacts early on with his with the warp in order to save his legion from the flesh change. They were always going to end badly, but I think that ultimately he tried to save the Imperium. He tried to save Horus as well while he was in Davin, and I think that you can only see his motivations as pure. And anybody who says that he did something wrong is wrong.
No amount of arrogance though. That's kind of misguided.
Well, I mean,
arrogance.
What Primarch is not arrogant? Well, okay. I mean, these are 18 super beings, right? Along with the Emperor. Which Primarch isn't arrogant? But I think that his motivations were ultimately altruistic. I mean, yeah, he wanted to save the Imperium and let his father know. He didn't. I mean, you know, you could say, right, that the Emperor didn't provide. And this is a criticism throughout the Black Library novels, which is that the Emperor didn't forewarn his sons about what he was doing on Terra and his greater plan and what he was doing with the Webway, you know. And so when Magnus came through, he had no idea that there were seals, you know, and wards on the Webway. And, you know, could you say that actually and this is a theme that comes out all throughout the Siege of Terra books, which is that, you know, if he had kept his sons more in the loop about what exactly he had been doing, would the situation have ended as it did within the novels?
I guess that's the dramatic irony, isn't it? And the
I suppose so. It's almost
a Greek tragedy, isn't it? The way that they kind of 100%. Yes. Okay, good. What is your favorite, or like, do you consider to be the pivotal point for you in the Heresy?
Heresy, you know, I read, this was one of the questions you sent to me, and I just, you know, it's difficult not to look at it as a timeline, right? And in a sense, and just go, well, the start must be the most important bit because it started it, you know, all off, right? You know, Horus being made War Master at Ulanor, that was the key thing. So I think that it's difficult for me to pinpoint one kind of moment, but I think that there were a couple of great moments throughout the Horus Heresy. For me. So the moment where Lorgar is basically chastised by the Emperor Gilliman and Malkador, because that really is what sets the story in motion for the Horus Heresy. And I quite like that they left that book till much later, actually, in terms of First Heretic. I like that. But that's really, I suppose, what the whole of the Horus Heresy hinges around, that moment. And then Lorgar goes looking for answers.
He turns his back on who he believes is God.
Is God.
And finds something else.
Exactly right, yeah. And then, you know, that allows Erebus to then kind of go to the side of of Horus and whisper things in his ear. But then again, you know, another pivotal moment, which I think has equal importance, is the Magnus moment, which is the moment he goes through the Webway, the moment that he breaks the seals, is the moment that the Emperor, the Custodes, and many of the key forces on Terra are forced to fight a 5-year war in the Webway in order to try and protect it. But also the Emperor is then leashed to the Golden Throne in a way that he wasn't previously. So it took him out of the Horus Heresy, effectively. It stopped him being an actor within it.
Forced them to look inwards.
Yeah, but also forced a huge contingent of the Emperor's forces to fight within the Webway. And then couldn't fight a galactic civil war. But then I suppose my third key moment. So I'm being greedy in choosing three.
It's all right.
And I suppose it's the moment for me where it stops becoming a galactic civil war and becomes something really quite insidious with the power of the warp, is where Horus goes to Moloch, and he goes into the demon world, goes, you know, into the lands of chaos, and then he comes back with the powers taken from or given to him by the ruinous powers.
The one covered in vengeful spirit.
Exactly. And I think that is the moment where it stops being just the standard kind of civil war. You know, the warp is, of course, important. Horus makes pacts with it. But that's the point, I think, where it descends into something more ghastly, and that there's no way back at all for any of the players, really. I mean, you've got Primarchs who are becoming demons by that point, like Fulgrim's gone full snake, right? But I think it's that moment where Horus becomes infused with the ruinous powers is a critical moment, because he becomes essentially almost unbeatable because of the power that he has. He can't be taken out in a assassination attempt or whatever. It's just, that's just not possible. Once he has those powers. So I think those three key things and those three key bits are probably some of the most important bits into the lead up, I guess, into the Siege of Terror.
I think that the Moloch part that you mentioned there as well, like that it is a real kind of passing over of Horus, who he was and who he becomes. Like, he is no longer, exactly. There's no shred of the man that you kind of admired in the first three books. Like, and I remember reading those three books, and it's like watching, you know, it's like watching Titanic, isn't it? You know what's going to happen, like you know the boat's going to sink, but it's kind of how he gets there, and when he returns back, afterwards, it's like 500 years or something. He's technically been gone for him.
Yeah, he's been gone a long time. Yeah,
but it's been like seconds for everybody else. Yeah. And he's just a completely, like, all shred of...
Changed,
Yeah, good. Okay, so we have dabbled in the world of heresy, but you're on here to talk about painting as well. And, you know, I want to make sure that, you know, the people who are watching this have probably seen your stuff on Instagram, and so I want to explore a bit of kind of like what you do with Meta's Miniatures. First off, tell us a bit more about Meta's Miniatures, you know, and what was the trigger for you to start doing full-time commission painting?
Yeah, so that's how long is a piece of string, really? So I was a teacher and have been a teacher for the past 12 years. And, you know, I did teacher training, left university, did masters in primary education. And I got to quite a senior position. I was an assistant head teacher by the time I left. But what had kind of happened, as often happens, which is that if you start to grow a relatively large following on Instagram, people kind of contact you saying, oh, can you just do this, or do you take any commissions, or that thing that you painted that way, I want it done that way. And so I did a few jobs here and there, you know, and small things, though, you know, never massive army commissions or anything like that, small things here and there. And you could fit those things in around your holidays, you know, having 3 months off a year allowed you to kind of, you had a lot of free time on your hands. And, you know, I'd done a couple of Warcry war bands, and I'd done some Emperor's Children. And then late 2019, I was contacted by somebody who wanted a huge Imperial Fists commission. I think it was like 100 infantry. And I hadn't taken on a project like that before. And basically, it would have cost thousands of pounds. And at that point, I was just like, the tax man's going to catch up to me, you know. He's either going to think I'm a drug dealer, you know, all these massive PayPal kind of payments, like, into my
crack,
well, yeah, resin crack, yeah. All these kind of payments into my PayPal, you know. So I think at that point I had to make a decision, which was, is this going to continue to be a small thing where I just do the odd job, you know, making less than £1,000 a year off just doing small commission work? Or do I need to set up an official business and start paying tax on it? I suppose was my main concern at the end of 2019. I did that big Imperial Fist commission, and then more jobs came in, and then more jobs came in, and then more jobs came in. And it got to the point, I suppose on top of that, we also had COVID within that period as well. So we all spent a long time at home. So because we all spent a long time at home, that unlocked free time for me. So that allowed me to continue to do commissions. And then by the time that we had all gone back to work and, you know, in teaching, you know, it was on and off because we, you know, went back and then we went into a second lockdown or whatever, or third lockdown, you lose count of what it was and how many times school closed or whatever. But basically by the time I went back, I was just done with the job. I was burnt out of teaching, done it for 12 years. Hadn't really seen myself as a teacher. I'd just kind of fallen into it, really. But I was just super burnt out from teaching. I just needed a break. So in 2022, August 2022, I kind of finished teaching completely. And then did the commissions. And the commissions work in a way. So my wait list is quite long, sort of 6-8 months. You know, this year, I'm teeing up clients to go into winter 2024. So I felt confident that I would be able to do it full time. And I would have been pleased if I'd been able to do it for 1 year full time. I think, you know, I was going to go 12 months full time. We'll assess the situation from there. Then that went, okay, well, things seem to be working fine. I'm financially, you know, just I'm as doing it as financially well as I was when I was a assistant head teacher. So let's make it 2 years. So 2 years will be this year, midway through this year. And then I'll assess the situation kind of again from there. And I suspect that actually we'll go, oh, it'll be another year. Yeah. I mean, I absolutely love it. I mean, you know, the commission painting is just, you know, I wake up in the morning going, I look forward to my day. And if anybody ever says commission painting is a hard job, it, like, they should try being a primary school teacher for 5 minutes.
You were set up I guess.
I mean, I see some people sort of crying online, being like, you know, commission painting is so hard. Like, honestly, be a teacher for like 5 minutes, you know, and then you'll know what it's like to work in tough conditions, you know. But I absolutely love it, and I get to work on projects that I really, really love and really inspire me. I get to work with, you know, clients who, you know, this is their, you know, one of their most prized possessions, right? You know, they can spend a lot of money on these things, and they care about them deeply, and, you know, they make time investments and as well as financial investments in these things. So I absolutely love it. And it's an interesting gig being a commission painter. And I would recommend it to people if you're looking into it and you quite like painting. You know, there's plenty of clients out there for everybody. Because often, you know, it's not that people can't paint. It's often that they're cash rich, but time poor. That's the thing. Or they're talent rich, cash rich, but time poor. And that's often the thing that, you know, you're allowing other people to game through the commission painting. But yeah, it's an interesting gig.
So going off script just slightly here, like, how with you doing the sort of the amount of painting that you're doing kind of day in, day out, like, you know, I've sometimes in my past, like, struggled with hobby burnout, and I have usually things which I rotate to keep it fresh for me, keep my, you know, energy levels up, keep me engaged with painting. How do you avoid kind of hobby burnout with doing, like, the amount of, I guess, you know, with it all being heresy as well, it's a lot of Space Marines, right? How do you kind of keep it interesting for yourself and keep yourself engaged?
Yeah, so there's two things, and there's two separate strands to that question. So the first strand comes from the burnout in terms of just the normal work. Well, you can't afford to be burnt out, because if you don't paint, you don't put food on the table, you can't pay your mortgage. It's not you don't turn up to work being like, oh, I'm so burnt. Yeah, I know I said that, but you still got to work, you know, and you can't just go, oh, I just need like 2 weeks off because I'm sick of holding a paintbrush. That's your job. That's how you put, you know. And as I said before, like, I get to listen to audiobooks all day and podcasts and paint miniatures, right? I mean, like, what better like job could there possibly be? But I suppose the second strand is really what you're getting at, is how do you balance your own hobby against doing lots of other people's hobby? That's the real thing. So I think number one, you got to say to yourself, you got to make time. So even if you're snatching an hour, half an hour a day for yourself at the beginning or end of the day, half an hour is better than no minutes. You know, half an hour, you can actually get some trim done on five miniatures within half an hour. And, you know, you do that five times in a week, you got the trim on the squad done, right? You know, sometimes you're at your speediest and most efficient in just, you know, that first half hour. What I like to do is make a little bit of time at the weekend for myself, like anybody would hobby, and they have looked forward to. And you go, I'm going to look forward to painting my own stuff at the weekend as a little treat to myself. You know, that will be an unwind by doing my own thing. And the other thing is that I will often paint for something. So I game an awful lot in terms of either going to events or local gaming with friends. And if you've got a list in place that maybe adds in a unit that you don't yet have painted, and you go, well, this is the list I'm going to take. This is the list I want to take, but I've got to get this unit done for that event. Even if it's just one unit, it will provide you with motivation to be able to go, okay, well, I've got to get it done by this date. So I need to get cracking. As well. And, you know, prior planning is really important. You know, if you've got a month, you can then break down each goal over a course of weeks, right? You know, airbrush on first day, next 3 days is about some edge highlighting, next 2 days is about transfers, et cetera, et cetera. So I think prior planning is also important. You can't just like sit down at the desk and go, oh, I'm just going to pick this thing up. Yeah, I think that for me, and it's the same when I do clients' projects, you have self-imposed deadlines that you can be flexible around, but it is important that these things don't go on and on. You've got to be like, oh, okay, I've got to get this done by today. And if I get this done by the end of that, I'll be on track for tomorrow. You know, and that's how I work. So I think that, you know, going back to saying about commission painting being a great job, it is a great job, but also you have to be disciplined with yourself. And if you're not disciplined, I think it can go pear-shaped is what I would say.
Great answer. Yeah, I mean, I find I don't get to play at many events because I spend most of my time usually running them. But, you know, Beachhead, which is the big event that we have once a year, it's time of recording, it's coming up in a couple of weeks' time. That's always been a massive focus for me for getting terrain done, you know, and seeing it's almost a challenge to myself, which is how much can I do in time for that event? And with terrain, it's I'll set myself like the bare minimum, and then it's like, what else can I get in there as well?
Can you get done?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Great. So, you know, you doing it professionally, you've acquired kind of a lot of stuff over the time that you've been doing it, you know, hobby supplies. I am an absolute hobby hoarder when it comes to trying the new and shiny stuff. Like, somebody just has to mention, oh, I happen to use this dirty down rust on you know, Instagram, and I'm like, oh, I'll go and spend £10, because most of the time that's weighted in shipping as well, like to get like this one product. But, you know, there are going to be people who are going to want to know the geek out questions here, right? Like, what is your kind of like your go-to gear when it comes to smashing out? I know you're an airbrush man, so like
it's difficult. when I was thinking about this question earlier, because obviously you sent the questions before, it's difficult not to just go airbrush, you know, as the most obvious one. So I think there's a couple of things to say with this. So the first thing is that I'm in a really fortunate position to have links with companies who send me free stuff. So it's all very well for me to say, oh, this thing is fucking amazing, but actually, like, it could be that I got that thing for free, right? So I think for listeners, I think that's important that you understand. So, you know, it often is the case if you're a commission painter and you've got a relatively large following, you know, you're not spending loads of money on these things because they're offset by the fact that you sometimes get these things for free. In terms of my, I guess, like hobby tools and things that I use, they'll always come from different companies. And I often think sometimes with these hobbies tools, for me, it's like when you open your bank account when you're 18, you often stick to them because you know them, rather than kind of like playing around with things too much. You know, once you've used that one thing, you get used to it, you like that brand, etc. So I let's start at airbrushes, right? So I would always use and always would always use an Iwata airbrush. I've used other brands of airbrush, haven't liked them, but it's because I started on an Iwata that, like, if you cut me, I bleed Iwata now, you know. I've had lots of airbrushes from them. I started on a Revolution, love that one, then went to the HPC, but now I use a custom Micron, which is probably the best, one of, if not the best airbrush in the world. You know, it's like a £500 airbrush.
Nice.
But it's my workhorse, right? I mean, it's like if you play the violin for a living, you're going to buy an expensive violin. It's just, you know, it's just, it, I use it every day. So if you are looking for an amazing airbrush, the custom Micron is it's the dog's bollocks. As for kind of paints and things, it will totally depend on a project. You know, I do not have, you can see all the paints behind me, loads of those of Army Painter, but there's Vallejo behind me, there's Scale behind me, I've got Tamiya up there, there's some AK, etc. You know, I say in my YouTube videos, you know, often, you know, I'll be in partnership with Army Painter for lots of my tutorials, but there are lots of tutorials where I would use other products on those videos. I suppose that the point is that I use the right paint for the job that it needs to be used for, right? You know, I don't exclusively use particular paints. You know, on some videos I will exclusively use, but you know, if I need to color match something for a client because they've had it done themselves or they've done it themselves, just use, you know, and they've used GW, just use GW. You know, it's whatever paint, you know, works for you. If you want, you know, high levels of saturation or vibrancy, then it's, you know, you think speed paint or contrast paint over like a white primer, for example. If you want good coverage, you know, war paint, Fanatic range is really, really good. AK is really, really good. You know, if you want a matte finish and you're trying to do something to a high standard, you know, AK is good because of the matte finish and, yeah, and they're good for glazing, right? So I think that you don't want to close yourself off to kind of any paint. As for weathering, so, and I'm sure lots of people watching this will have, yeah, weather lots of Titans and their Legions Imperials. I mean, I swear by Winsor & Newton Artist Oils. I think that, you know, but again, I've used other brands, but I just, yeah, Winsor & Newton is easily accessible. You can get them from any artist shop. You can get them from Amazon and eBay relatively easy, but they're what I know and what I'm used to, right? So, and they work for me as well. But you know, things like enamels, I would use Ammo's products, but I have a partnership with Ammo as well, which, you know, then kind of fosters that relationship and allows me to use those enamels as well. So yeah, so I guess that I am not, oh, and I have a partnership with Redgrass Games, but I think most people would tend to use palettes and things like that from Redgrass Games and painting handles and cutting mats and things like that. So, you know, I use all those things, but also, let's face it, if you're getting those things for free, you're probably going to use those things anyway, right? I think you need to be realistic about these about these things. But yeah, but as I'm not sponsored by Iwata, but I do use those airbrushes and swear by those airbrushes. I've used Harder and Steinbeck. I've not been able to get on with them. And in fact, I gave away my £200 hard and signed bet because I just was like, I'm never going to use this, right? This is not the airbrush for me.
I've got an Eclipse.
Yeah.
And that was the first proper airbrush that I bought after my £20 one from Amazon, you know, where everyone uses to kind of start out trying to work out how this thing works.
Yeah.
And it's the same. I've also got an apologies rival paint channel, Cult of Paint.
Yep.
The
Harder and Steinbeck.
Harder and Steinbeck one.
Yep.
And, you know, it's a good airbrush, but I keep going back to the Eclipse. I think it's just like I'm one of those terrible people who mixes in my airbrush.
I do that all the time.
Good. Right, it's fine. I feel better then because everyone's telling me I shouldn't do that. You can't do that in like the Harder and Steinbecks or those kind of things, whether the Oatas where it's all one piece.
It's because, and also the Harder and Steinbeck has a very deep well in it, which makes it much harder to do the mixing, whereas the well is not as deep in the Iwata. I mix all the time in the Iwata, like literally all the time.
Yeah, I feel a bit better about myself. Okay, so, you know, you've painted probably thousands of models at this point.
Yeah.
For one, you know, throughout the course of your, not only your professional, but your personal life as well. Do you have like one model? And I suppose that, you know, it doesn't even have to be your own, but it would be a lot harder if this was a commission job to answer this question. But like, what is the, for you, your favorite model that you've ever painted? And, you know, this is the thing which you keep kind of like walking over to in your cabinet every now and again, just picking up and thinking, God, I really love that.
That's a good question. So, so I'll break this question into two, I think. So one of the problem, I suppose it's not a problem. One of the issues about commission painting, it goes back to what we were saying before, is that if you're commission painting, you're painting for a purpose. So your time is often squeezed in terms of how much other painting you're able to do, be it your own painting. Now, one of the problems is, I personally think that you need to watch out for if you're a commission painter. And if you are, you know, any kind of painter or thinking about doing commission painting, this is important, is about your skill level plateauing. Because it is easy to get into the habit of just going, I paint like this, I follow this formula, it is procedural, this is what a client has paid me to do, therefore I will just do it this way. And if you're just doing the same thing over and over and over again, especially if it is procedural in a lot of the way that kind of airbrushing, weathering, battle damage is quite procedural on things like tanks, you will plateau in terms of skill level. It doesn't matter, you might finesse the process, but you won't get better at painting. And by better at painting, what I mean is basically the way in which you handle a paintbrush, I suppose. You know, if you think about understanding of color as well within that, being able to glaze, being able to highlight, being able to layer smoothly, being able to, you know, I suppose all the technical aspects. Yeah, edge highlighting, all the technical aspects of painting. But if you follow a procedure and keep on doing that over and over again, you won't get better. So that's the first thing to understand. So I think one of the things is that, yeah, when you look back at artists, you know, you look, or anybody on Instagram, what you want to see is some kind of progression over the years. Because otherwise, you're just at a plateau. I hopefully that resonates with people, you know, that they can say, yeah, you know what, over the years I've tried to push myself. In teaching, you call it the zone of proximal development, which is that you have to go outside your comfort zone in order to challenge yourself. And if you stay within the comfort zone, yeah, that old adage, you won't get better.
That resonates quite strongly with me, because like when I started painting, I painted a lot of Titans now, you know, and, you know, I don't own all of them anymore, but I used to try and approach, and I think Titans in particular for 40K, and this is probably the same when you've got bigger models as well, like Knights in 28mm or Dreadnoughts, those kind of things. Every project that I did, every Legio I did, I tried to learn a new technique.
Yes.
So I think the first one, I wanted to integrate oils into my palette of skills. And then it was like using pigments. Mm-hmm. And, you know, each one I tried to, and then like the last project I did, it was kind of like a culmination of everything that I'd learned over the last few years and incorporated loads of them. So that's it's really interesting. You said like that's,
So
I can totally resonate with what you're saying.
Yeah. So what you're doing is you're saying, okay, well, every project I'm going to try something new. You know, if you think about the British cycling team back in when we had the Olympics, what they decided to do was improve on an incremental level in terms of everything. So increase everything by 1%, right? And that's another strategy. So rather than learning a specific skill for a project, you are going, I'm going to try and make everything better, right? So the really important piece for me was an Inquisitor I did, which followed Andy Wardle's masterclass that he did on Patreon. Now, if anybody has seen it, it's a very, very early video from them. One of their earliest set masterclass pieces. And basically what Andy does is he takes you through brushstroke by brushstroke about how to paint this Inquisitor. And it was good because it goes over like five episodes and you see every brushstroke. And that was really important for me because it taught me a lot about layering, but also about glazing as well. A little bit about non-metallic metal, about volumes and highlights, about edge highlighting. And now I did that maybe in 2020. So it's been a while. It's been a long time since I did that. But that was one of my most important pieces because I felt that at that point, my skill level then jumped up quite quickly from doing that experience. And actually, if you're looking to up-level your painting, I can really recommend that Inquisitor kind of set masterclass because you will learn an awful lot. And even if you have to do it two or three times, you know, you can do the same model over and over again. You know, your progress will jump. The danger, though, for me, and I always think this, is that about going, you need to ensure that you don't plateau. So what is it you're doing again? Now, I have never, ever, ever been motivated by Golden Demon, high-level competition art. It's just not my deal. I think it would bring out the worst in me. And I think that I like to paint, I suppose, army. Army painting is what I'm about. So it's about finding that balance of kind of like quality over quantity. But I think that, you can still have individual pieces that are at a high level. And it's about deciding what you're going to do to be able to try and progress your skill further. And often Patreon is artist Patreons are a good way to go about kind of making sure that you aren't plateauing.
When I painted my Graphonicus, it was Richard Gray. I went on his Patreon. He had some great tutorials for Graphonicus. I followed that. I learned how to paint trim on a Titan in the most insane manner I think I've ever kind of decided to attempt.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it's good for my health painting trim like that all the time. I then couldn't do it any other way. Like once I'd learned that, it was
because
I wanted to always do it.
Because I mean, the way that he does it is because he shades it, doesn't he? And to make the highlights look quite dynamic on the individual pieces. The other thing I think is that I do a lot of teaching, be it one-to-one, but I do, you know, this weekend, actually, I've got 15 guys doing the Kratos course with me. And then in April, I'm going to America to host another Kratos course there. And often I think that, you know, these guys, they obviously want to progress. They've paid money in order to not plateau. But also, lots of people just want to find that happy mix between quality and speed, I think. And actually, that's the sweet spot. That's the bit where most people, most hobbyists sit. Most hobbyists are not Golden Demon winning artists, nor do they ever want to be. And I suppose that, you know, they're trying to find the balance between quality and quantity. And being able to get something done within a realistic time frame. And I think that that's, you know, that's what I always hope to achieve within my painting and teaching people how to paint as well.
Okay, Rob, last question, and then I'll let you go for the night. You can go off, have yourself a few beers or whatever you do before you go off to bed. What is the one piece of advice that you wish you had been told 20 years ago or 10 years ago?
Oh, my God, yeah. Okay. So, yeah, that's a good question. I think there's lots of things that I would... I mean, I suppose you could look at it and go, what would I tell myself just as a painter? What would I tell myself as a commission artist? You know, what would I tell myself as somebody starting out in the commission world, I guess? I mean, you know, we've spoken a lot about commissions, so I'll probably hit all of those angles. So if I was to tell myself, I think it would be, and I alluded to this earlier, which is that learn how to use an airbrush as soon as possible. I think it makes a massive difference to hobby, the speed at which you can hobby, the quality of the paint job that you can do in terms of army painting. So it's interesting because people, you know, some people will be like, well, you can do a quality paint job without an airbrush. And I'm like, yeah, and I'm not disagreeing. But I think that, you know, if you like a look which is, say, like high contrast within your models, a striking army on the tabletop, being able to use an airbrush will help you speed things up, whether you are painting kind of Legions Imperialis, Adeptus Titanicus, Heresy, Space Marines for 40k, whatever. You know, it's a learn, make time to learn that skill. Go on a course. You know, I host courses all the time about airbrushing. Paint do courses. You know, lots of people do courses out there. If I was... Early advice for commission painters, if you haven't got any clients at the moment, my advice would be buy a couple of battle boxes, you know, be it Heresy battle boxes, Adeptus Titanicus. I forgot what they did, like a good battle box that had like five Titans in or something.
I mean, that would you'd assume that would, well, you'd need stock.
Well, if you can get hold of the stock, you know, but also 40k,
they've been talking about a Maniple box for a while, but like was hinted back in August last year, I think, and it's still not materialized yet.
Maybe not AT then, but you know, but 40k has kind of like getting started boxes, whatever. What that does, if you're looking to get into commission painting, and if you paint one of those up, number one, it will get you into the rhythm of painting things fast and painting things in bulk. Number two, it gives you content for your socials, which you've got to stay on top of if you want to advertise yourself. You know, you can't just not do social media. You know, we are in a landscape. If you are a business, which is social media, is, you know, one of the key pillars that allow businesses to succeed. So if you're just one of those people's like, well, I'm never going to do social media and I expect to be a commission painter, that just get real, because you know, you need to do social media. And so it gives you content for social media. You can turn that into reels, you can turn that into, you know, photos, whatever. You will learn some photography skills along the way, because you're going to have to photograph those things that, you know, end products. But what it also does is that if you sold it, you know, let's say you bought it for 90 quid, sold it for 200, 250, you know, you're making a small profit. And remember, you know, you're only just starting out. You're not going to make massive amounts of money, but you're making a small profit. But also, if you sell that to somebody, that somebody might say, could you do me another X unit? Could you do me another battle box? You know, I like your style. Can you do me, you know, a different army, right? And what that does is start creating clients for yourself. It might not lead to somebody asking for more, but it might lead to asking for more. And that's a great way to, and because you've taken lots of photos of those things as well along the way, you're then getting yourself out on social media saying, I offer this service, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that, you know, if I was speaking to my younger commission self looking to start again, if I hadn't got a client base, I would definitely be looking to do that, you know, selling it on eBay, selling it on Facebook marketplaces, selling it on Instagram. And yeah, I would look at that. One thing, I guess, another piece of advice, again, it's sort of deviating from your question, but it's something that interests me, is don't be afraid to get yourself out there and start speaking to companies early on about sponsorship. Even if you're small, you know, these companies might want to take a punt on you. Especially if you're not big, especially if you have no affiliation with Games Workshop, you know, it's, I think, sometimes in their interest to take a bit of a punt and just say, yeah, sure, we'll send you a wet palette or whatever, no problem. You know, send an email saying, you know, I'm a new commission artist or I'm looking to make content. You know, is there any chance that we might have a partnership or you can send me some products? I'm happy to, you know, say that I got this from you or whatever. And I think that, you know, lots of my sponsorship deals are not because people have come to me. Some of them are, but many of them are because I went to them and said, this is who I am. And I think it's, don't be afraid to get yourself out there, because, yeah, sometimes it's not going to come to you. You've got to go get it, I think, is one of the things I say. But yeah, there's quite a lot in that answer, I suppose, that different phases of my life, you know, and for you guys listening, yeah, I guess I hope that's, yeah, useful. Airbrush and, yeah, and if you're looking to be a commission artist, I'm happy to discuss that a bit more and a bit further. But, yeah, it's something that interests me in particular.
That's great advice. I've always said the airbrush for me was always the thing which was a bit too expensive.
Yeah.
You know, it was, you know, it was a cost, really. It was like, why do I need this? Yeah. And then I got one.
Yeah.
And I wish I'd done it 10 years ago.
And that's the thing, because I think it's an investment, isn't it? That's the problem. Is that it's about a long-term investment in your own skill. And I think lots of these things as well is about, you know, skills are important for human beings to develop and learn. And as you get older, it's important to continue to learn new skills. And an airbrushing is a skill that you can finesse and finesse and finesse and get better at. You know, there's a certain level of airbrushing that we can all probably meet. And then you've got to push yourself to, you know, if you look at some actual artist airbrushing, you know, that's like the next level of airbrushing. But yeah, it's, as you say, it's often a cost. But if you just said to yourself, I mean, how much do you spend on models a month? It must be like 150 quid, like minimum, right? I mean, what do you reckon?
The wife might be listening, so let's reel that question back a little bit. But okay, let's just say you're probably somewhere around that.
I mean, well, what's that? Like, you know, 2 or 3 months of not buying any models, you could afford an airbrush, a really decent airbrush.
A good one.
With a compressor. Yeah, with an airbrush booth and like some airbrush cleaner and thinner and a pot, and you're away, right? I mean, I must spend like 400 quid on models a month, right? You know, just on stuff. And I'm sure you guys are probably the same, which is that you probably just buy stuff that just gets, you know, accumulates dust. And I just think that if you haven't got an airbrush, then, you know, really consider it.
And I think for those people who kind of know us for Adeptus Titanicus, like the Titan models, I think, are the perfect canvas, really, for learning airbrushing on, because it accommodates for all levels of airbrushing. You can go just as simple as just getting your base coats on to doing something like way more advanced. And, you know, it has been, and I guess tanks as well, you know, like it's another great medium. You get those really nice fades and
exactly that. Yeah. 80 is kind of perfect, really. Start learning on. I think there's some things about scale. I think about airbrushing, you know, you can have some sick fades on some Adeptus Titanicus like armor plates, but I think that, you know, it's a discussion for a different time about the scale at which that you guys particularly are working at, and like what fades are realistic, etc. against what looks good on the tabletop. Because I always think that when you're a miniature painter, you've always got to balance that almost that scale modeling side, you know, against what looks good, I think is always a question to answer. But yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I've painted Titans before, which, you know, I've taken photos for Instagram and I thought, oh my, like this is the top of my game. I love how these look. And I've put them on the table and I think they look really dull. Yeah. And it's sometimes that difference, isn't it? And like I said about earlier on about like with the speed paints and stuff, like with the high contrast for armies, you know, most of the time you're going to be looking at these things from at least 2.5 feet away.
Yeah.
And it's sometimes more important as to how they look when you're down. Obviously, if you are a gamer, if you like put them in cabinets and that's all you look at them for, I'm sure. But
because hall lighting is not very good. It's not like, you know, a task lamp like this where you can see all the scratches and details that you've put your hard work into. Like hall lighting is often just terrible. So you've got to factor that in when you're army painting and go, okay, well, I need to probably punch up and dial up the vibrancy in my paint job. Even if I like gritty paint jobs, I still want my army to look punchy on the tabletop. Punchy is always the word to describe, but you know, almost like in your face, and sometimes, you know, vibrancy is. That's why I like bright ultramarines and bright imperial fists, and you know, colors that are highly saturated, you know, just vibrant and bright. That, you know, always are the armies that I would tend to do.
Rob, this has been absolutely fascinating. I think I've learnt a lot myself this evening, which I don't think I was actually prepared to kind of to take away, but it's been really, really great. Thank you so much for coming
on the show
today.
No problem at all.
Do you have any kind of last sort of things that you want to shout out, or any words of wisdom?
Yeah, so I'll do just a plug for myself. So if you're looking to get something commissioned, then please get in contact. The best thing to do is email me medesminiatures@gmail.com, and then if you're interested in getting quotes, I will give you a phone call and we can discuss what your army might look like and the quote that would be associated with that. If you're more just looking for extra kind of content and painting, I have a YouTube channel completely free. Most of my work is done on that YouTube channel in partnership with the Army Painter. So I completely and utterly shill for them. So be prepared for that. But usually I'm always trying to do things that are perhaps you have not seen before, or things that are different. I try not to, you know, and I often describe my YouTube channel as like the Ryanair of painting, right? There's no A and B reel. It's just me, you and the paint. You know, so today I've got I don't know if you can see that, I've got a Thousand Suns model, but I've used technical blood paint for the armor. So hopefully, you know, something different that people haven't seen before. And if you want heresy, extra heresy content, I run a podcast with my friends John and Lee called Heresy Hammer. We do all things 28 mil, although Lee's keen to do Legions Imperialis. But we also have a Patreon for that as well, where you can get Tactica kind of content as well as other rewards and gifts. And we do kind of trimesterly giveaways as well on there. So you can join that for as little as £3 a month. So definitely worth checking out if you love all things Horus Heresy.
Thank you very much, Rob.
No problem.
And all the best, and I'll catch you soon.
Thanks for having me.